Different time.
Different place.
Different pitch.
December the 7th, 1989, East Berlin. Guest, Elske Rosenfeld. Soundtrack from video material by Klaus Freimuth. A programme by Danny Gahl and Achim Lengere. Assistance and research, Andreas von Stosch and Eva Storms. English voices, Jeff Burrell and Dulcie Smart. Sound engineer, Zohar Boni.
Ob die Aufgaben der Volkskontrollausschüsse, ob die Tätigkeit der Bürgerkomitees, die im Sinne von Sofortmaßnahmen gegenwärtigem Wirken, aber doch immerhin die Perspektive haben, dass sie das allererste Mal in diesem Land authentisch dafür sorgen können, dass das, was hier immer als Defizit vermerkt wird, nämlich die Legitimation durch das Volk, vom Volk selbst artikuliert wird, dass die Möglichkeit besteht, dass die politische Mobilisierung, die aus dieser Krisensituation entsteht, nicht dazu führen kann, dass in der DDR ein Volkskongress zusammentritt, wo die Delegierten dieser Ausschüsse sich zu Wort melden, und zwar auch in Bezug auf die Fragen, die wir hier auf sehr verschiedene Weise diskutieren. Mir läge daran, dass die hier am Tisch befindlichen Vertreter dazu eine Erklärung abgeben.
Dankeschön. Darf ich jetzt mal unterbrechen?
Wir hören gleich hier draußen. Wir dachten, erst hat einer ein Radio an. Das ist eine ganz große Menschenmasse mit Trommeln, Pfeifen, Schreien, Stasi raus vor der Tür. Wollte ich das nur sagen, es ist eine ziemlich große Menschenmenge. Ich hoffe nicht, dass sie reinkommt, noch stehen sie vor der Tür. Aber sie stehen unter einem hohen Erwartungsdruck, wenn ich nur sagen. Diese Geräusche sind also von da hinter der Haus.
Eine gute Lösung. Wie zieht sich das da drauf jetzt?
Also, ich will etwas sagen.
Danke.
Ich könnte es mir vorstellen, also heute ist ja der 7. Ne? Und es ist aufgerufen worden, und die meisten werden das wissen, dass endlich mal ein klares Wort zum Wahlbetrug gesprochen werden sollte. Und vielleicht müsste das dann auch hier Aufgabe unseres Tisches sein, zu diesen Dingen Stellung zu nehmen.
Wir sind ein bisschen in einer komplexen Situation. Wir haben gerade eine Intervention auf sehr grundsätzliches hin und stehen plötzlich vor der konkreten Notwendigkeit, zu handeln, wenn ich das richtig sehe. Ich weiß jetzt nur, ich hätte nur eine Bitte, die an die Dokumentaristen. Bitte rufen Sie doch nicht Leute heraus.
Man standing at the back of the room. There's a huge crowd with drums and whistles outside, shouting Stasi out. Just wanted to let you know, it's a pretty big crowd. I hope they're not coming in. At this point, they're just outside. The expectations run high, that's all I want to say, so the noises you hear are coming from behind the building.
There have been appeals that someone should finally make a clear statement about the electoral fraud. Maybe it should be the task of this round table to take a stand on this.
We are in a bit of a complex situation. We have just heard a proposal about very fundamental issues, and suddenly we're confronted with the need to act, if I understand this correctly. And I would like to ask the documentarists, please don't call people out of the room, especially when we don't know what it is about. So, what was this just now? Would you please tell us? There's a big demonstration outside the door. Well, then please bring this to the table and don't just tell individual people. Well, I thought that you can hear it and are taking action. I think we have to make a statement here, and I think that we can. In the Declaration of the Opposition, it says under point 2, the Office for National Security as an anti-constitutional organization must be dismantled under civilian control. And I think that the executive bodies must now be given the mandate to do this. And I think that to make an announcement along those lines might be necessary to avoid further agitation. Yes, I have one more suggestion. There are many SPD signs outside. I would like to go and stand outside before things get worse without making an authorized declaration. I would ask if two or three people could come with me to stand outside to avoid confrontations. This was a concrete suggestion. I would like to pick up on that. We're discussing, should we send a delegation outside?
Maybe we can agree on Herr Ullmann's suggestion.
No, please, I asked, do we want to send a delegation from this round table, not just from one side?
Yes, but a delegation that makes a joint declaration then, not just one representative from the SDP who tries to negotiate, but...
I think what you demand is justified, but we are not at a point where we can make a joint declaration, especially when it comes to particular questions. We would have to discuss these here first.
Then we should say that we are talking about those questions.
May I explain again? Outside is a demonstration, and we are discussing if someone is able to go outside and make a declaration. The question is really to avoid further escalation on both sides. You must not forget there are people working in this office. If we tell them now that they have been permanently engaged in anti-constitutional activities, then maybe there will be aggravation on that side. And I think we have enough aggravation in this country. We should try to de-escalate these things. Herr Gysi, if I may interrupt, the question is simply that we may have to react very quickly. I just want to note that we did not like that some people went outside. Ladies and gentlemen, excuse me, if you have any respect for the mood among the people at this moment, then surely we cannot be making any joint declarations. I suggest that three men go outside.
And women.
And women take heart and go outside to stand in front of the people without a declaration. I trust all my friends in the opposition to find the right words that will not cause further aggravation.
My name is Elske Rosenfeld. I was born in 1974 in Halle, which was the DDR at the time. So what you proposed and I agreed to look at in this talk is a video piece that is part of a larger body of work that I've been working on for the past 6 years, and that title is A Vocabulary of Revolutionary Gestures. And that's a kind of complex of different works of which this video is a part and quite a central part. You could also say a starting point. My work on 89 comes from a personal perspective. It comes from having lived through this experience of 89, of the revolution, which is now generally referred to as the fall of the wall, in inverted commas, which I experienced as a young girl in Halle at the age of 15, where I was already quite politically active before the revolution started, and then became very involved in the revolution. And basically my... And the revolution happened very fast, so a year later it was like... As everybody knows, the two Germanys were reunited, and the kind of revolutionary perspective that had come up in 89 was lost.
It was the largest demonstration in East German history. The main square was carpeted with a 500,000 people. The city virtually came to a standstill.
Our top story. The Iron Curtain between East Germany and West Berlin has come tumbling down. East Germany announced today it is opening its borders, allowing its citizens to go anywhere they wish. The future of the Berlin Wall is now up in the air.
The East Germany's communist leaders have now taken a symbolic sledgehammer to that wall. It's conceivable, I suppose, now that the wall, the real wall, the real sledgehammers will soon be brought out on that wall. There's no longer any point of it being there. Prospect that no one could have predicted a year ago or even a month ago.
This has been a city physically divided for 28 years, but now it's come together, east and west, in a spontaneous outburst of emotion.
This could be the first move to dismantling the Berlin Wall that has stood as the most painful symbol of a divided Germany since it was built in 1961.
One after another, drivers and passengers alike said they plan to use their new freedom to spend a weekend in West Germany and take a look at how the other half lives.
Every East German coming to the West receive 100 marks, about $50. Many West German businesses are staying open round the clock to give them a chance to not only spend their money, but pick up goods to take home.
Hundreds of thousands of East Germans swarmed the streets of West Berlin. It was like a sea of people.
This morning, a new hole was made in the Berlin Wall at Potsdamer Platz. Yesterday, it was the Glienicke Bridge that opened up. To many of us, these are just place names. But what signal do these places send to the German people?
Potsdamer Platz was the Times Square of Berlin before the war. I was on Glienicke Bridge yesterday, and I have never seen more grown men with tears in my eyes at any time in my life on that bridge.
The vast majority of East Germans don't want to leave homes, jobs, and families to go live in the West. The question now is whether the breaches in the wall have whetted the appetites of people here, not for just a little more change, but a lot. East German leaders hope that by dismantling those things that have become symbols of their past, they can encourage the return of skilled workers, the doctors, engineers, and scientists needed to rebuild the country's future.
My interest in this particular history never really stopped, but it took me quite some time to actually get around to figuring out how I could deal with this history, because it was very personal and it was to do with a very both great hopes and great excitements that I connect with this revolutionary experience, but also with a big disappointment. I think it's maybe good for context that I speak a bit about what the disappointment was, because I think that's maybe not clear to people who don't know about this revolution, because I think to the general public, especially outside of Germany, but I would say almost equally as much to many people inside of Germany, the events of 89 appear as if they were very successful, because after all, they dismantled a dictatorial regime. They opened the possibility for national unity. That's the narrative, how the official narrative of how the story is told, that it was this great moment of breaking free and being able to travel and all this sort of stuff. And what this story covers, and the story that is very much connected to the official images about this history, which are the images of people sitting on the wall or drinking champagne on the wall or kissing each other and all this sort of stuff. These images have become very dominant, and also this version of history has become very dominant to the extent that, like I said before, the whole history is referred to as the fall of the wall, which is effectively one aspect of a revolutionary development, and by no means the most central aspect. So my disappointment, in a way, is to do with the fact that in the early revolution, even before the wall fell, or especially before the wall fell, there was a very, very strong process of empowerment, of realizing that a collectivity can take to the streets and can have develop an enormous power, to have an enormous political impact, and basically put on the table for public discussion the basic questions of how to organize one's collective life. You have a situation where you have a very authoritarian government, and then after a week, after a month of protests, this government is suddenly completely delegitimized, and that filters through the whole society into all sorts of other authoritarian or hierarchical relationships, for example, at school, where suddenly you're having conversations with your teachers about how to organize classes and what should be the content of school and what should be the purpose of school and all these sorts of things. So suddenly all these very basic questions that you don't normally negotiate in that way become negotiable. And this for me is what makes a revolution, is when certain kinds of discussion go from a very limited group, which could be an activist group or underground circles or whatever, go from that into the street and become and gain a sort of critical mass. A critical sector or a critical proportion of a society starts discussing. Not only discussing, but they're discussing it in a context where their discussions can have and will have real consequences. And this is an incredible experience. And then to go from that in a very, very short period of time, you could argue 3 months, we'll maybe talk about that a little bit later, about the concrete timeline of the events, but I would say maybe in 3 months from this complete empowerment of a demos, a people as demos, to a process where suddenly the demonstrators and the protesters are not the center of actions and of discussion anymore, but the decisions are being made somewhere else again, in another forum. And in the case of East Germany, this other forum was the negotiations between the two German governments. So suddenly, the forum for discussion was no longer inside the revolutionary circles, but the forum was the old discredited government now suddenly discussing with the West German government about the takeover of East Germany by, or the ascension of East Germany to West Germany. And that didn't so much close down the discussion, but it made it, pushed it to the side. And so this kind of moment of everybody deciding and that discussions having consequences is already over at this stage, because there's another level, another institution of decision making, or another forum of decision making that is no longer the revolutionary one, but it's a separate one that is hasn't come out of the revolution. This is kind of the period that I'm interested in, is between this suddenly becoming very empowered and suddenly seeing that the power to discuss and the power to have discussions collectively with consequences has been taken away from you again. The roundtable meetings were interesting to me because they were a forum that came together some weeks or even months into the revolution. So when the government was already discredited, they knew that they couldn't govern the country on their own because they had like no legitimacy. And the oppositional groups were trying to claim a stake within the governing of the country by this stage. And the round tables were taken from the Polish model and were, I think, suggested by some church representatives in East Germany who took the initiative, because the church had a bit of an alternative public sphere type function in East Germany. And they invited, or they proposed this format and called people from the former government organizations, or the, still the government organizations, and people from the oppositional groups. And the idea was that they would meet in equal numbers and figure out how they could collectively or together manage the transition of the country to actually parliamentary democracy of the Western type, was, I think, the idea. So the idea was not to make an alternative way of political organization that could have become permanent, but the idea was to sort of have a temporary forum for making sure that the country would become a democracy along that particular existing model. So nothing super radical. And so this table came together and met overall in December 1989, so 1 month after the fall of the wall. And they met 16 times in total over the next 3 months until March. The reason for that is that March 18th was the general elections, the first so-called first free general elections. So it sort of covered that time period from first sort of giving a forum for these oppositional forces to meet the government and then handing over power to the new, freely elected new government. And this material was available at the archive in its entirety. So there were like 16 meetings of, I don't know, 8 hours or 5 hours or whatever it is, each fully documented in as video, as audio, I'm not sure, but video and transcription. So it's a wealth of material and it's incredibly well documented and archived, but nobody is using it as far as I know. And my experience, of course, was not the round tables. My experience was the streets, and it was whatever happened in our school, which was not documented. And so I was curious about one scene during the first meeting of the round table, which I found in the book, first of all, not in the videos, but in the book it said meeting one, agenda, points 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and there was one point that said a demonstration passes outside the building, or something like that. I was like, oh, that's interesting, because that's kind of where my experience of the revolution meets this forum of the round table. This particular work is focused on this 10-minute scene, which is a confrontation of this round table forum, which has just met, with this other forum, this other democratic force, which is the street, in inverted commas, the demonstrators. Most would not call themselves socialists because the term is extremely discredited and controversial, even though at that point the aim of the whole exercise was still to reform socialism. So when the demonstration started, the idea was not this reunification, because that was basically inconceivable when the revolution started, but the goal was to reform socialism to make it more democratic, which is partly to do with the background of the East German opposition, which was in these leftist issue groups. And I would say that many of them don't really fit into such a clear political spectrum like we have now, or like we had in, like there was in the West, because it was a different, completely different situation. But there were a few groups that corresponded closely to what we have now, what existed then in West Germany. For example, there was a Social Democratic Party that was very clear about their interest in party democracy and representative democracy, which the other groups were not. The other groups had a different concept of the political, basically. And the other groups ranged at that stage from, if you want to use that language, the far left to the center left. Far left, or the most explicitly pro-communist, you could even say, or anarchist, were the Vereinigte Link, who were a lot of them self-professing Marxists or communists, but critical. And I mean, what they all had in common was that they had been thrown, by and large, I think some of them were still party members, but most of them had been thrown out of the party and undergone certain repression. Some had been in jail or whatever. This was probably the most explicit, and also the most, in a sense, Vereinigte Linke was the group that had the strongest political scope within, like, awareness in a way. So they knew, they kind of had an idea of where they wanted to go with this revolution, as the other groups were more kind of, they came from their subject matter and they fell into this revolution, and then they were like, aha. and the other groups, one was a sort of emergent Green Party. I think at this first meeting it wasn't a Green Party, that I think they were called Grüne Liga, Green League. So they were also not party-based. So all the other groupings were not, apart from the Social Democrats, were not equivalents of a sort of West German party.
In Russia itself, communism fell apart, all right? So the whole bipolar world that used to exist, the free world versus the communist world, that went away. You know, after the Russians withdrew, a lot of things happened around the same time. The Russians withdrew from Afghanistan. That really marked the end of the beginning of the end of the Soviet Empire.
Certainly. With the fall of the Soviet Union, the world became much more complex for the intelligence community. Instead of having, you know, a bifurcated world, which, you know, I grew up during the Cold War, and I was a CIA case officer in Africa during the Cold War and in Southeast Asia. And, you know, our interests in countries were not exclusively, but certainly influenced by whether or what their relationship was with the Soviet Union or with the communist world. And so we were not only, you know, interested in our relationship with those countries, but what their relationship was vis-a-vis the Soviet Union. And of course, there was great interest in keeping our allies away from the Soviet Union. We didn't want them to make inroads into places like Africa, Southeast Asia, Latin America. We'd seen Cuba, and, you know, there was deep concern that the rest of South America would, you know, be taken over and fall under the Soviet sphere.
You know, people refer to the 1990s as the holiday from history.
After the end of the Cold War, Francis Fukuyama argued that in the end of history, that the kind of the passions that motivate humans, nationalism, religious extremism, what have you, would gradually deteriorate, evaporate, and what would be left would be kind of an EU all over the world, in which everything was just bureaucracy and paper pushers and so on. Well, that had some immediate popularity, but it was obviously not right, because we saw very shortly after its publication the reemergence of rather strong nationalism and, of course, religious passions, religious fundamentalism throughout the world, including the United States.
The Cold War was obviously very dangerous, but in a certain sense, it was also very convenient. It was very simple. There were two great powers, and they were confronting one another for influence all around the world.
The round table is not round, it's rectangular, and the camera position is interesting because the camera is positioned at a kind of weird place. So if you have this rectangle, the cameraman is standing in one of the corners of the short end of the rectangle. So two legs of the rectangle, he will only see people in profile, and two legs he will see people's faces. And what's notable about this video is that the people that are doing the talking and the people where the action and the energy is are not the people that are sitting facing the guy, the filmmaker, but they are the people sitting next to him. So throughout the video, we will see you have a lot of panning back and forth from one side to the other. So what we're seeing here is the camera panning back and forth between the two sides, like I said, so between the side of the opposition and the side of the more active people from the government parties. And now the camera zooms on the moderators, which are sitting on the far end of the table.
Ich glaube, es sind sehr viele SDP-Schilder draußen. Ich bin der Meinung, es sind sehr viele SDP-Schilder mit draußen.
Darf ich jetzt mal unterbrechen? Es ist ja hier vielleicht hinaus. Wir dachten, jetzt hat einer ein Radio an. Es ist eine ganz große Menschenmasse mit Trommeln, Pfeifen, schreien quasi raus vor der Tür. Wir wollten das nur sagen, es ist eine ziemlich große Menschenmenge. Ich hoffe nicht, dass sie reinkommen, auch stehen die vor der Tür. Aber sie stehen unter einem hohen Erwartungsdruck. Diese Geräusche sind also von da hinter der Haustür.
So the camera has now panned back to the left, and the camera is showing a woman from the opposition making a proposal for how to deal with these people that are now suddenly appearing outside. This is a nice scene because there's a voice coming from the off from behind the cameraman. The camera has just panned back to the side of the table where the opposition is, and you can see everybody's faces turning towards the camera because the speaker is standing behind the camera. So you have this beautiful moment of, like, people that were looking at the moderator before are now all in synchrony turning their heads towards the door. So, because on the sound level, what was interesting to me was that you... the demonstrators, so the street, are only present as sound. So the sound is somehow in a way crucial to this work also, because there's a kind of threat or a kind of unclear agent that you can't see, but you can hear them. And in this part of the film, you can hear the whistling really, really clearly, and it creates this really strong sense of urgency. Like, it really matters what we decide here, because something could happen.
What is he saying here? What is the topic?
Well, generally, I mean, they're all talking about the same thing. They're trying to figure out if somebody should go outside, and if so, who they can speak for. So it's about, in general terms, it's about representation.
So who would
represent the table, and in what function, and what can they actually say? Because the round table is not a forum that can speak for itself at this stage, because it just came together like literally a minute ago. So they're discussing about that. So it's very basic, these fundamental questions that you have in all political groups of who can represent a political group that doesn't have a formal political structure, for example. And it's also about the question, which I find very interesting, of who is this outside, and who are they supporting, and who are they being a threat to? Because nobody knows, are they there because they perceive of the round table as a friend, as a forum that supports and represents their interests, or are they there because they think the round table is, or because the government sits at the round table and they want to protest against the government. So there suddenly these kind of two opposing forces, let's say the two main players of the revolution, are being put in a situation where there's sitting on opposing sides of the table, but in a larger picture, they're sitting at the same table compared to this outside, which is not defined.
Das ist der Ansatzpunkt.
Ja.
Den Bogen schaffen, wir sitzen, wir arbeiten, wir werden heute zu den ersten Ergebnissen kommen. Ich hoffe, Ihnen das verzeiht.
Ich habe das nicht mitbekommen, ja? Das ist die Meinung. Ja.
In conclusion, is that actually the narrative that you see is very simple, and it's almost universal in the sense that it describes a collective decision-making process that in the end fails, or that is, let's say, overtaken by reality. Because before they can make a decision, reality has developed otherwise. Mm-hmm. So when I show this, and that's another thing that makes this video very interesting and very relatable, because also people that haven't been in a revolution know the situation very well, that you talk and talk, and at the end of it, reality has already moved on. So that's interesting. But for me, the point is not really that this process fails, but the point that interests me is more the fact that something is not functioning so well on a verbal level, but a lot is happening at the same time on a physical level. Like a lot. And I was very interested in how in the physical time almost expands. So the narrative is 10 minutes long, but if you slow down and if you look at how people move, it suddenly becomes a very, very long, long moment in time. This repeats something that I noticed in my, because I was saying earlier that I have a feeling that this sense of disappointment and excitement about the revolution is shared with other people. And I've come to that conclusion not because people that I speak to have managed to explain to me, or that we've had to manage to figure out together what was so special about this revolutionary moment and what was lost, but what makes me certain that there is something of relevance in this moment is the fact that people still react very, very strongly on a physical level to these memories. So in a way, every time I ask people to speak about, oh, where were you in 89 and what did you think, is a little bit of a reenactment of what I work through in this video, which is the fact that their bodies start to almost shake. I mean, that's an exaggeration, but in a way there is a strong, strong, strong physical affectedness there. But there's an incapacity almost to express what that is in words. And this incapacity to express what 89 means in words means that people say things like, yeah, you know, we were naive. It would never have worked to have this other, I mean, we had, our hopes were too high. It would never have worked. So somehow there is at the same time a discrediting of their own excitement, but the excitement is there verbally. So for me to, and for me this kind of, for me this meeting of this nonverbal intensity and the verbal inability to express and give voice to this intensity is interesting, because I think that's a point where I think the kind of intensity of that moment continues in a form. you can step back into that effective space almost of the revolution, but you can't put it into words.